Turns out that the majority of slave voyages didn't begin in Europe, they began in the Americas. And the Americas was, in fact, the heart of the business, not Europe.
This is 15 Minute History, a podcast for educators, students, and anyone interested in history, featuring the minds and voices of the University of Texas at Austin. Beginning in the 15th century, European history took a dark turn with the rapid expansion of the slave trade. We're joined today by Emory Professor David Eltis, the co-editor of slavevoyages.org. Slave Voyages draws upon thousands of archival sources, ship logs, registers, letters, and government records to understand the mechanics behind the slave trade. His new book, Atlantic Cataclysm, utilizes these records to offer a new interpretation of transatlantic slavery, centered on the Iberian rather than French or British Americas. Dr. Eltis, welcome to 15 Minute History.
Glad to be here.
There are two words in your book title, one in the title, one in the subtitle, I wanted to begin with, the word cataclysm and the word rethinking. Let's start with cataclysm. Why have you called your book Atlantic Cataclysm?
There's nothing quite like what happened in the Atlantic Ocean between the 15th and the 19th centuries. And I think that in itself justifies the use of the word. The movement of people was immense. Mortality rates were horrific. And I don't think there's anything in the historic record, certainly not in the 20th century, that can match it in terms of those characteristics.
And the subtitle of your book is Rethinking the Atlantic Slave Trades. What is it that we need to rethink about the slave trade?
I'm actually trying to get a rethinking, not just of the slave trade, but of Atlantic history. Because I think the focus of research on this topic, really since the 19th century, has been on the North Atlantic and the connections specifically between European traders and the Americas. What my book does is suggest that the focus of the business was actually in the South Atlantic, and the concept of the Middle Passage is wrong. It's built on the idea that there was a triangular trade, whereas what I'm arguing for is, in fact, an out-and-back trade, because it turns out that the majority of slave voyages didn't begin in Europe. They began in the Americas. And the Americas was, in fact, the heart of the business, not Europe. The South Atlantic has not received anything like the attention it should. I say Atlantic history because it also turns out, this is a second major conclusion, that the vast majority of Africans that were hauled off from the continent, the subcontinent, did not end up in the US or in the French and British Caribbean, but rather in South America. And the reason for arguing this is based on a reevaluation of a second slave trade, which is the intra-American slave trade. There was a substantial movement of captives from the British Caribbean in particular to what we can call the Iberian Americas. What this suggests in turn, some pretty damning revisions, in my view, is that almost two-thirds of all the Africans carried off ended up actually in the Iberian Americas. And what that in turn suggests is that, in fact, the most prosperous part of the Americas was not the what became the US or the British Caribbean or the French Caribbean, but rather Brazil and Spanish America. The whole project's really based on a website called www.slavevoyages.org.
What was your motivation for the Slave Voyages project? And did you expect the data to show you what it showed you?
Well, to answer the second question first, no, I didn't. This is something that's really just emerged in the last few years. You see, Slave Voyages only began to accumulate data on the inter-American traffic around 2018. And it's that which I think has caused me to suggest a reinterpretation of Atlantic history as necessary. The original goal was simply to collect data on the transatlantic.
What data sets are you relying on? Where's the primary sources that you're finding coming from?
There's an amazing variety of sources, many of them documentary. Far more than any single individual could actually examine and exploit. I'm author of this project, but it couldn't have happened without the, I can only describe it as mass involvement of scholars over the period of the last half century.
Do you expect more primary sources to be added and discovered?
Yes, a major feature of the site is, in fact, to encourage people to contribute. I don't mean contribute funds, but I mean contribute data. And a lot of time is taken up with editing those contributions. Obviously, we can't just accept them at face value. We have to check them, make sure they're correct, of course, and in some cases go back to the original source. And that's happening on literally a daily basis. Part of my current activity is just editing the contributions. So yes, I expect additional data to become available. And it might well result in us increasing the overall total from, say, 12.5 million to possibly 13 million.
What is the significance of that number?
The real significance is not so much the number itself, but the distribution of that number. Because one of the results of the analysis that we've made is that it seems very likely that the basic drawing card, if you like, was further south than we thought. Now, this has implications for developments in Europe because there's a strong argument being made these days, accepted by, I would say, the majority in the media, which is that the slave trade was the foundation of British industrialization. What we've found is that essentially that's just not plausible because, in fact, the country that was mostly responsible was not Britain, but actually Portugal. And it did not show any signs of industrialization during the period when the slave trade was at its peak in the 18th and 19th centuries.
Would there be an analogy with America, North America there, and it's the South where slavery is prominent and the North where industrialization is taking off?
It's a different issue in the sense that the slave trade to North America ended effectively in 1807. Industrialization, of course, happened beyond that. And the rapid growth of the black population of the U.S. occurred in the 19th century. So there were only perhaps 380,000 Africans disembarking in on the North American mainland. But by the time of emancipation, as a consequence of the Civil War, the population had grown to 4 million. So the black population of the U.S. is essentially the result of natural population growth, not the slave trade. The slave trade actually contributed very little to the North American continent's black population.
Why do you think this debate around British prosperity and the slave trade is contentious?
That's, I guess, going beyond my remit, but it's the literature on the British slave trade is the most complete. People know it. in a way that they don't know the literature from, say, Portugal, certainly not from Africa. So there's a natural tendency to see Britain as the core of the system. The reality is likely to be different from that. I mean, in terms, people search for simple causes, essentially. And starting with Eric Williams's book in 1944, British participation in the slave trade has come to be seen as central to industrialization. I mean, I'm not saying that slavery didn't contribute. Of course it did. But when you look at the distribution that we've found with the slave voyages site, the distribution of arrivals in the US, it's just not a plausible hypothesis.
What impact does the forced migration of Africans to South America, what are some of the impacts we see?
Well, the black population in Brazil is probably the greatest of any country in the world except Nigeria. It's also the case that the system that the Portuguese developed was unique. A large ratio of their crews were actually black, and some of them were enslaved. And some of the enslaved were actually paid wages as part of the voyage. It's almost a different world compared to the North Atlantic, and it's an underappreciated world. The South Atlantic system has really not had anything like the attention it should have.
What do you think the benefit to the historiography will be with that southward shift?
A better understanding of the system. The British had a highly capital-intensive structure to their slave trading, which you don't find in the Portuguese case. It reflects that the slave trade didn't necessarily need the great capital markets and the capital intensity that you find in the North Atlantic.
One of the questions you seek to answer with your scholarship is, why were the slaves always African? And you've talked from there about the emergence and persistence of anti-black prejudice.
Oh, I think anti-black prejudice was there at the beginning. It was reinforced, of course, by what happened in the Atlantic. But it's very striking that when you consider the options open to Western European powers, it's very striking that they did not choose to use their own citizens. They had convicts. They had the large numbers of poor people, but they certainly tried to ship some of these individuals to the plantation colonies, but they never put them into slavery. Slavery itself was something restricted to black people, which suggests that the prejudice that we're still experiencing was there at the very beginning.
I do suppose I have one last question, which is, for the future of slave voyages, do you anticipate a role for artificial intelligence in processing data?
Yes, you can argue maybe in a few years that slave voyages site will be redundant. At least it'll be possible to get your questions answered quite differently in the way which we didn't anticipate. The slave voyager site does offer options which perhaps will be harder to reproduce, but I think in the long run, people will address their questions about the slave trade to AI or ChatGPT rather than to the slave voyager site. Of course, AI will draw on what we've done, so it's not certainly not lost.
I would think something differently personally, that you've crafted a data set that can be used by scholars utilizing artificial intelligence to process that data quickly and spend more time thinking about what it means than collating it. If you'd have had more time in your career to spend analyzing rather than collating the data, are there directions you would have liked to have taken this research?
I think the site is so complex and covers so many regions that it's pretty impossible for one person to get on top of what's going on. So if anything, the site has kind of restricted my own work. This is only my fourth book, although I've got many edited volumes. And in a sense, the creation of the site has hobbled my output. On the other hand, it's provided the basis for a great deal more output from others. So from that perspective, of course, it's a plus.
Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Altus.
My pleasure.
15-Minute History is produced at the University of Texas at Austin in partnership with Not Even Past and Hemispheres in the College of Liberal Arts. It is recorded at the Lates Development Studio. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, follow us on social media, and visit our website for more information and resources. See y'all next week.